Thank you very much for coming. Are we all excited to be here? I'm gonna try. Are we excited to be here? Okay. Take it easy out there. Tough crowd. All right. So the could you three very beautiful people just move over here? Because my neck is going to be... That lady can sit on the sofa because I married her and she's now pregnant. And she's allowed to stay on the sofa. And that guy sitting next to her, I married him to her. So he can sit next to her. But you three I need right next to me over here. Okay, so the topic this evening is why Jews become comedians. And I think it's safe to say that laughter and jokes have definitely been part of Jewish history and Jewish culture for millennia, you know. And pretty much every rabbi thinks they're funny, obviously. Every Jew thinks they're a comedian, you know. They have to throw in a joke, and they always like finish your jokes off for you and that kind of stuff. But what I want to show this evening is actually how deeply rooted, and it isn't by coincidence, that Jewish people do have this desire and need for laughter and for telling jokes. We're going to see that it is no coincidence that we live in a world where most of Hollywood are Jewish, whether they agree to the fact they are Jewish or not is neither here nor there, by the way. They can call themselves whatever they want, but they are actually Jewish. And all the comedies that come out, all the movies and shows are actually, you know, there's always I'm one of these people who reads the credits after the movies and spots the Jew. You ever do that? Am I the only one that does that? I know the Jew spotter. It's a Goldstein, right? And if it's a non-Jewish name, it must be married to someone Jewish, you know? So I'm always in that kind of world. So jokes have definitely been part of our culture. I've got to begin with a joke. How can I start a talk on do Jews become comedians without telling jokes? It's offensive. It's just wrong, isn't it? So the story's told of an Irish guy is walking down the street and he sees a religious Hasidic rabbi with a big furry hat on, and a gust of wind blows the hat off. So he runs over to him, picks up the hat, and, you know, wipes it down, gives it back to him. And the old rabbi says, "Thank you so much." He says, "Are you Jewish?" He says, "No." He says, "I want to give you a blessing. For the rest of the day, you're going to make a lot of money. That's your blessing." The guy says, "Fantastic." Where does our Irish friend go? To the racetrack. And he looks at the form, and he's looking at all the horses, and he sees in the 2:30 race, there's a horse called Stetson. He's like, "Wow, one second. I helped this old Jew with his hat. And there's a horse called Stetson. It's got to be." Takes $100. He's paid for the whole day. Puts it down. He wins. $10,000. He's like, "Wow, this is amazing." Looks at the 3 o'clock. There's a horse called Sombrero. He's like, "Dude, it's got to be. I mean, I helped him out with his hat. All right, has to be." Puts down the money. He wins $50,000. It was a big outsider. He's like, "I can't believe it." Couple more races to go. He looks at the form. There's another horse with the name Fez. Sombrero? Stetson Fez? It's got to be. He puts down $50,000. He wins $1 million. There's one more race. He puts down all his winnings on this last horse. He loses everything. He goes home, totally dejected. He walks in. His wife says, "Where have you been? I gave you a dinner to the dog." He's like, "You won't believe the crazy day I had." He's like, "Well, tell me." Walking down the street, religious Jew, pick up his hat. I go to this, gives me a blessing. I go to the races. I put money on 3 horses that had names of hats. There was a Sombrero, there was a Stetson, there was a Fez, and there was one more race. I put all the money on this last race, and I lost it all. His wife says, "Oh my God, what was the name of the horse you put the money on?" He says, "I put all my money on a horse called Chateau. You know, the French word for hat." She's like, "You idiot. The French word for hat isn't Chateau. The French word for hat is Chapeau." Because, by the way, what was the name of the horse that won the race? I don't know, some Japanese horse called Yamaka. That's not bad. You'll be telling to your friends tomorrow. So Jewish humor also comes in different areas of life. There's also the idea of conflict resolution. There's the famous story of the man that dies and leaves his three sons with 17 cows. Three sons, 17 cows. But he says in his will, he wants the first son to get half of the 17, his second son to get a third, and his last son to get a ninth. They're like, what are we going to do? 17 doesn't divide into half, doesn't divide into 13, and a ninth of 17? That's impossible. These are live cows. So they go to the rabbi, and the rabbi's in his office, and he strokes his beard wisely and says, I've got a solution. I'm going to give you one of my cows as a gift. You now have 18 cows, right? Half of 18 is 9. A third of 18 is 6. A ninth is 2. Add those together, you get 17. I'll have my cow back, please. Think about it. There's Jews on there like BlackBerry trying to work out the... Also, when it comes to... That's a good one, by the way. Conflict resolution is a good one. When it comes to family, shalom bayit, right? Family, you know, shalom bayit. As they say, how do you have shalom bayit? Your wife asks you for something, you buy it, you have shalom. Okay? So, when it comes to dealing with couples and that kind of stuff, it's very, very important that you have a sense of humor. Like the couple that go to see the rabbi, and she walks in and she bursts out crying. Rabbi, I can't take it. 5 years of marriage to this man. 5 years. He hasn't told me once that he loves me. Rabbi turns to the man and says, is that true? He says, Rabbi, when I met her, I told her I loved her. If anything changes, I'll let her know. Or the man is walking down the street and he hears a scream from the cemetery. Why? Why did you die? Why did you die? It was terrible. He sees a man with his head on a tombstone banging it. Why did you die? Why did you die? He walks over to him and says, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. I feel lost. I mean, were you close to the deceased? He says, no. I never even met him. Why? Why did you die? He goes, well, who is he? He goes, my wife's first husband. Or the rabbi standing by, this is my favorite. It gets the least laughs, but it's my favorite. The rabbi standing on the train station, and a young man walks over to him and says, excuse me, rabbi, do you have the time? Ignores him. He says, excuse me, rabbi, do you have the time? Ignores him. He says, please, rabbi, I need to know the time. He says, okay, it's 2:30. He's like, why don't you just answer me the first time? He goes, I'll tell you why. First of all, you ask me the time. Then you want to sit next to me on the train. Then you're going to get schmoozing with me and talking. Then I'm going to see you're a great learned scholar. You're going to want to come back to my house for Shabbat. Then you're going to come to my house for Shabbat. You're going to meet my beautiful single daughter. And you're going to want to marry my single daughter. And I don't want my daughter marrying someone who doesn't own a watch. So, that is actually my favorite one. In the Jewish jokes. I have other jokes which I can't tell here because I'm on camera. But for a private rendition of my other rabbinical jokes, you can see me later. We all know, listen, look at the list over here, right? We have, you know, Jack Benny was Benjamin Kubelski. We have these names. Yeah, Mel Brooks was his real name, anybody know? Melvin Kaminsky. Milton Berle. Do you know these comedians? These are people I grew up with, by the way. I mean, not literally grew up with, I'm much older, but Mendel Berlinger. Gene Wilder, I was a big fan of his. Jerome Silberman. Jackie Mason. Right, you know he's Jewish, by the way? Okay, fine, just checking. Yaakov Moshe Mazer, by the way, his nephew has a yeshiva right around the corner from me. He's a very big rabbi. Happens to be true. Buddy Hackett was Leonard Hacker. Jerry Lewis, Joseph Levitch. Danny Kaye, used to be Daniel Kaminsky. Rodney Dangerfield, Jacob Cohen. Joan Rivers is Joan Malinsky. Tony Curtis was Bernie Schwartz. Actually, you know why he changed his name, right? Tony Curtis, Bernie Schwartz is not good, right? And obviously, we see the modern comedians, right? The Seinfelds and Larry Davids and the Palestinian chicken. Anyone see that? He's out of control, that guy. He's out of control. Can't lie, I did laugh. Okay, so what I want to do is get to the root of this, because I grew up loving humor, right? I used to watch comedies, and I was a big fan of Danny Kaye. I used to watch his movies, and I was also a fan of someone whose politics stinks, actually, but he's funny, Woody Allen, right? He's a funny guy. He's like Olives, though. Either you love him or hate him. I was a big, big fan of his, and I used to like memorize all his routines. And a lot of people do that and tell jokes. And I've always wondered, and it kind of stayed with me, why is it we Jews have such a prominent role in comedy? You know, what exactly happened, you know? And I read a small Talmudic piece that says that the rabbis in the olden days, this doesn't answer the question, but it's interesting to note, the rabbis in the olden days used to actually begin all their speeches with jokes, like we did, right? And it would start with milta devchuta, with jokes, you know, to ease people into it. This is 2,000 years ago, right? And then they would get to real serious points. By the end of the speech, people would be crying. So you start them off by laughing to open them up, and then you start hit them with the main point they wanted to drive home. That's the system the rabbis used to use. But it doesn't answer the question, where does it come from? Is it coincidence that all Jews are like funny, you know? So, okay, this guy's asleep. You know, you can sleep on a talk about Yom Kippur, right? You can sleep, but you ain't sleeping during this talk, my friend, right? You sit over here, you hit in striking distance, okay? What do you do for a living? What do you do? You're a doctor? You're a lawyer?
Finance?
Yeah, go back to sleep. Okay, so the question is, I'm kidding, the question is, where does it come from? What is the root that we Jews are jokesters? And I found it. It happened by coincidence. And I was reading through, when I was in rabbinical school, when I was in yeshiva, I was reading through a commentary by a very famous thinker. And I'll tell you who he is in a second. I want to tell you what he was talking about, and then we'll jump to him. And in order to, we have to travel back in time to biblical times. And the Torah describes how the Jewish people, remember we are descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They had 12 sons, became families, became tribes. We end up in Egypt, right? 70 souls went into Egypt, were there for 210 years, very difficult time. When the Jewish people left Egypt, right, in the Jewish year 2448, right, at Pesach time, 15th of Nisan, that's 3,320 years ago, that's when we became a nation. That's when Jewish People Inc. started. I'm saying that's like Apple 1970s, Facebook 92, right? Jewish People 2448, that's the key date, a year to remember. So we left. 7 days after leaving Egypt, does anyone know where we were standing as a people? This is all of our ancestors, by the way. All of them, right? Unless you're a convert, of course, right? But even if you are, actually, you still connect yourself to this event because it really defines who we are. So 7 days after leaving Egypt, we're standing at the Yam Suf. What's that? The Sea of Reeds, right? Or the Red Sea, it's sometimes called. Both are correct. Okay, it had reeds in, and at nighttime it becomes red. So we were standing there. Now, what was behind us when we were standing at this water? Anybody remember the story? You saw the movie, maybe? You obviously didn't read the book. What? Right, so the army of the Egyptians, right, this was Pharaoh, with all his choice chariots and all his leading soldiers, and they weren't there to pick us up and give us a taxi ride back. Right, they were there to kill many people and maybe take the choicest ones back. Okay, so in front of us, put yourself in the zone. In front of the Jewish people was a big sea. Behind the Jewish people were Egyptians ready to kill them. So they were just not armed. Well, they were armed, but not ready to take on an entire Egyptian army. To the right and left, says the Medrash, certain stories that have come down were wild animals. So as far as they were concerned, what was going to happen? They were dead. They were trapped on all sides. And then it says a very interesting thing. If you look at chapter 5, verse 11, it describes the following thing. It says the Jewish people, I don't know if they said it in unison, right? Or one person said it, but everyone agreed with it. But the Jewish people turned around to Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu at that time, and they said the following verse, which is really weird. And maybe you're not Bible scholars here, but it doesn't fit in with the rest of Chumash, with the rest of the Torah. They turn out to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, I'll say in Hebrew, I'll translate. Hamabli, Ein Kavram Mitzrayim L'Kachtan L'Mus B'Midbar. Moshe, were there no graves in Egypt, you had to schlep us out to die over here. What a strange thing to say. I mean, just take it at face value. Are there any graves in Egypt? Of course there are. I'm sure many people have died in Egypt before. So what were they doing? And this verse that struck me as unusual, and some commentaries give some, commentators give some ideas, and then I found a commentary by, actually, what I consider to be the best commentary in the Bible, and you get it in English, published by Feldheim. It's by a German called Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. He was a rabbi in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and he wrote a commentary, a beautiful one, which for some reason has come back into vogue among the Jewish people. It's recently translated into a much more, it used to be translated thee, thy, thou, and now it's translated in a much more digestible fashion. So he writes a very small paragraph on this verse. And he pretty much says that what the Jewish people were telling Moshe Rabbeinu is a joke. What? They were about to die. As far as they were concerned, it was all over. They didn't have the prophecy at that moment to know that in a few minutes, the sea was going to split for them to go through. They didn't realize that. As far as they were concerned, it was all over. Right? Put your chips in, place your bets. We're all done. And I'm going to read his words for you exactly. He says, this comment was made at the moment of the deepest anxiety and despair, and is, this is these words very carefully, if you miss this, you're going to miss the whole talk, and is the characteristic witty vein that is inherent in the Jewish people from their earliest beginnings. What does he mean? What's he saying over here? He's saying something unbelievable. He's saying that programmed into the Jewish people from our beginning, which is right here, right, at the split of the Yam Suf, and about to get the Torah 42 days later, built into the Jewish DNA is this ability to joke and laugh. Why? Says Rabbi Hirsch, I'll tell you why. Because right through Jewish history, we're going to have it tough. For whatever reason, the Jewish people are going to go through pogroms and holocausts and exiles. And it's not going to be easy to remain Jewish. And all the other nations are going to be wiped out. But this small band of people called the Jewish people are going to be there forever, right to the end of days. And they better have a sense of humor about it. Because if they don't laugh, they're going to go crazy. And that's what Rabbi Hirsch, quite amazingly, is the reason why we, the Jewish people, have inside us, in some, I mean, you can try to find, we're going to find some psychological and sociological answers. I'm giving you a spiritual one. I'll be giving you a spiritual one. I can't prove it to you, but if it really is true, it should resonate as true inside you, that inside all of us is this, things are tough for the Jewish people. We get a really tough ride. Why is it talk for another time? But in order to help us get through us, through that, God gave us this ability to laugh at others and at ourselves. There was a book brought out by a journalist and a political activist called Norman Cousins in 1979. And this guy wrote a book called Anatomy of an Illness. Basically, well, he was a Jewish guy, by the way. I gave this talk years ago, and someone there actually knew his daughter. His daughter was a very strong, self-identifying Jewish woman. And he lives here in America as well. And he wrote this book because he got a really terrible case of arthritis. Right? In the 1970s, I don't know how many painkillers they were, but it was very, very difficult. And he writes at great length about this. And he'd be writhing in pain in his bed. And people would come to visit him. And they would buy him grapes and fruits and books. One guy turns up one day with a video. Remember videos? It's like big plastic chunky things. Used to. Okay. I'm speaking too old. Turns up with a video of the Marx Brothers. Remember the Marx Brothers? There's Groucho and Harpo and Chico and Carl, right? And he was a riot, by the way. I read his stuff, I'm like, oh, that's great. Bourgeoisie, proletariat. Oh, can't get enough of it. That's fantastic. No, he was actually being serious. Shame that. And so he put the video on, and he's watching this video, and he started to laugh. And he's like, but they're very funny. Anyone see the Marx Brothers? It's classic, right? And he's watching and laughing and laughing. And he found that the more he laughed watching this movie, the more he didn't feel his pain. So he basically told all his friends, if you visit me, bring me videos and comedy. And he pretty much would watch, and he writes about this in his book. He starts to write about how he watched comedy after comedy after comedy, and the pain that he was feeling from the arthritis actually disappeared. It had an effect upon him. And eventually he started, I don't know if he did it single-handedly, but there's actually a center in his name at UCLA, right, some school, which actually does research into the powerful effect that humor has on removing pain, physical pain, for real conditions, not just mental stuff, but physical pain is removed. They actually did a study in Israel where they took a control group, I found this coincidentally, took a control group, and they had one group put their hands into ice cold water, okay, and and watch comedy. And the other group put their hands into ice cold water and watch horror movies. And they found the people who had their hands in the ice cold water watching comedy keep their hands in for longer. Which reminds me, actually, I was going to mention this, but funny, when my wife was pregnant, She, we had a doula, you know, a birthing coach. Basically, they teach you how to go, and that's pretty much it. And it was good for me, though. I relaxed a lot more. I, during the pregnancy, I'm like, forget about her, me, I'm dying over here, you know. So we were with her. So she did an experiment. Her point was, it's kind of related to this, but it's funny. She said that women have a higher pain threshold than men. That's what she claimed, okay? And being married to me, my wife actually needs it, to be fair. And she made us both hold ice cubes in our hands. And secret holder, try it one day, right? Try it with a friend, male or female. And in fact, actually, my wife could hold onto the ice cube. After like 3 seconds, I put it down, you know, and started crying and, you know, went to fetal position, put my thumb in my mouth, you know. But my wife was able to hold on to it, you know. They have, I think God actually imbues women with, you know, this power. So the idea that laughter and comedy has this ability to take us out of it. There's I was just in Israel, got back a couple of weeks ago, and the tall guy, this is true, this was unprompted, had a book on him called, it was actually a book in Hebrew on comedy in the Holocaust. Okay? Now that's not usually two topics we put together, you know, although nowadays, you know, there've been movies like this. I saw this movie, Life is Beautiful, with this, wasn't it, Benigni guy. I didn't find it funny. I don't know, I didn't like it. I'm maybe uncomfortable. Some people liked it a lot. I didn't like it, you know. And then you have like Larry David, he's like all about, you know, Holocaust survivor humor, you know. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about during the Second World War, during the war, they have now books that they've collected, this is unbelievable by the way, of comedy, jokes, and funny pictures that were written by the inmates in the concentration camps. Right? And they were actually, and they used to do plays, and description of the plays they would actually do. Now, why were they doing that? I mean, I was actually in Auschwitz last summer. Right? It's not a fun place to be, you know, but when you're there and in that world, day after day, week after month, eventually you need this thing, this coded thing from the time the Jewish people left Egypt, that if we don't laugh a little bit, we're going to die. And there's a lot of stuff. And there's actually a book I found, I haven't read it, called Laughter in Hell by a guy called Steve Lippman. And what this guy basically did is he collected a lot of these testimonies and these writings, these books of Jews in the Holocaust that would use humor to get him out. I went with a survivor, a fantastic guy, a Label Zisman, and he's a funny guy. And he says sometimes, if you don't laugh, you're going to die. You know, at some point, not that it's funny, we're going to see, this is very important in a moment, that just because something is funny, just because you laugh at something doesn't mean it's funny. Okay, laughter, we're going to see, is a reaction to something. So we're going to look at that. We're going to look at the sources in a second. Before we get there, I just want to give you another couple of things just to put you in the mood. There was a very famous Talmudic piece I learned in a tractate called Tanit, one of the famous tractates of Talmud, right, 2,000 years ago. And it tells a story. It tells a story of someone called Rabbi Baroka. And Rabbi Baroka was walking through the marketplace. And he has a revelation. He sees Eliyahu Navi, Elijah the prophet, okay, and he approaches him, and this is the great prophet of the time before, and he walks over to him and he says, wow, Eliyahu, nice to meet you. He says, I have a question for you. Now, why he asked this question, I don't know, but this is the question he asked him. He said, who here in the marketplace, everyone hung it, that was the mall of its day, you know, actually probably very similar, considering now all these Israelis are selling Ahava cream in the middle of every mall in Israel, right? And in America, New Jersey. Hey, what's up with that, by the way? Hey, why do they make all the way here just to sell me Ahava cream? Come, I rub the cream in. Lady, your hand very smooth, Mrs. Cohen, right? But those guys make millions, by the way. So he's there in the marketplace, and he says to Eliyahu HaNavi, Elijah the prophet, who here is B'nai Olam Haba? Which roughly translated mean, who here is going to get a direct line into the next world? It's an interesting question. Who here has a direct line into the next world? And he points at two guys and says, those two people, they're gold. So he obviously walks over to them, right, Baroka, the Talmud tells us, and says, what do you two guys do for a living, right? Are you lawyers? That's unlikely. Right? Are you doctors? Right, possibly. What exactly do you do? And these two guys give a very interesting answer to Rabbi Baroka. Remember, these two guys who are like the spiritual greats who were in the marketplace at that time. And they said, we are comedians. We make people laugh. You see, when people are sick, they get down, they get depressed. We go to their houses. We do a little act. We tell them jokes. And they throw us a coin. And that's how we make a living. And I'm sure they made a pretty good living because Jews can get very depressive, you know? And they would go around and they would do this. And right, Eliyahu HaNavi, the Elijah the prophet, said, these guys, they got it. They got it right, you know? And I found a beautiful quote. I don't know how old you all are over here. Don't tell me. Not my business. But there's a famous Jewish comedian called Jimmy Durante. He used to have a really big nose. He had a humongous schnozzle. Remember him? Anybody know him? Yeah? He's a classic comedian. So look at this. He said, look him up on YouTube. He's a very funny guy. He said something prophetic and very inspirational. He said, it dawned on me that as long as I could laugh, I was safe from the world. And I've learned since that laughter keeps me safe from myself. Too. All of us who have schnozzles, all right, those big nose, right, are ridiculous in one way or another. If not in our faces, then in our characters, minds, or in our habits. When we admit our schnozzles, instead of defending them, he says, we begin to laugh and the world laughs with us. It's almost like the tears of the clown, you know what I'm saying? He says that we got a lot of baggage. Right? We Jews have a lot of baggage. In our case, it's Louis Vuitton baggage, but we have a lot of baggage comes with us as a people, you know, and it's tough. He's saying, really, in concert with everything he said so far, that this power to laugh is a very, very important thing. I'm going to take a little right turn. I'm going to come back in 1 second. Now it's in my head. One of the most important places that laughter must be utilized, and we're talking about pain and difficulty, is in marriage. Okay, I'm being very serious. And what's interesting is that the Talmud uses Kriyat Yam Suf, the splitting of the sea that we spoke about, as a metaphor for a number of things. Okay? It uses Kriyat Yam Suf, the splitting of the sea, as a metaphor, as an analogy for a number of things. And one of them is getting married, right? And actually being married as well. So why would that be? So what I want to say, I think I made this one up, but it works. I say it at many weddings that I perform, the party afterwards, you know. I say that many people take themselves too seriously. And it's not a good thing, you know. We're big lawyers, big doctors, you know. My wife now, you know. It's not good for marriage. Right? The great people I've seen who have good marriages, no matter how successful they are in medicine or whatever it is, they don't take themselves too seriously, you know. So I think there's a reason why marriage is connected to splitting of the sea. It goes like this. Just like the Jewish people were standing at the sea and felt no way out, there's times in marriage where you also feel trapped. Okay, it's going to happen. And in front of you, you don't have a big sea. You have your friends who are telling you to do something, you know. And behind you, you don't have Egyptians. You have your in-laws, yeah. And to the right and left, you have your parents. And come to us for Rosh Hashanah. Oh, you got to come to me for the holidays. And they're arguing, and you're arguing, you know what I'm saying? And at some point, and you've got dirty dishes up to the ceiling, and there's like underwear all over the house, you know, like... And my wife was like, why do you keep your underwear in the sink? I'm like, where else do you keep your underwear? I don't know. Is there another place? I grew up, I put it over there, and it was like folded nice and clean inside the drawer a day later. I mean, it didn't happen by itself. You know, you don't understand this kind of stuff, you know? So all this stuff goes on, and you start to argue, and you're about to implode, which happens, especially in the first year of marriage. You know, it's my first week, actually. And you feel that tremendous pressure. You got to laugh. Trust me. You got to say, this whole thing's ridiculous. It's just, this isn't right. And when you laugh, you'll see that the sea splits, right? Suddenly your in-laws disappear, like the Egyptians have gone. And suddenly everything is like, because when you laugh, what are you saying? It's all nonsense. The whole thing is ridiculous. You know, this whole thing's like, it's just like them crazy at us and dishes. Let's just laugh it off. And sometimes that's really a good thing to do as well. Okay, what I want to do now is something which is very, very important and I consider fascinating. And I want to dissect a joke. And there's a reason why I'm doing this. I want to dissect a joke. What makes a joke funny? What I'm going to claim right now, and I'm going to tie into Judaism, what I want to claim to you is that every joke, every story, everything that makes you laugh follows a very specific and determined formula. I'll say that again. Every time you hear a joke, no matter what the joke is, no matter how long, you hear a funny story, you see a comedy, whatever makes you laugh, even if it's not funny, but you laugh, as we'll see in a second, it's got the same formula. Every joke has got to have the following three elements. Okay. Are we all excited for this? Great. Number one, every joke must have a beginning and a middle and an end. Was that funny? Okay. Great. Not only that, every joke must have an end and a punchline, which occurs at the end of the joke. Are you with me? In other words, you could put the punchline at the beginning of the joke, you could put it in the middle, but it's got to be at the end. If it's not at the end, it's not going to make you laugh. And number three, that punchline, this is the most important part, has to be a complete twist. Completely unexpected. The last thing you expected to happen happens, you laugh. Let's go through it again. You got to have a beginning, you got to have a middle, you got to have an end. We're good. Two, the punchline, right, to your joke or story, has got to appear at the end. And that punchline, number three, has to be a complete twist. The last thing you expected to happen has got to occur. If you have those three elements, you've got a joke. Let me give you an example. Right? The classic example of an individual. Okay, let's make a story. We have here a very tall guy, very pompous. Yeah, and he's walking down the street. He's got his big coat on. He's got his hat. He's smoking a cigar. Right, he's that. And then, right, we zone in on the banana skin on the floor. And the old classic joke, yeah, the old banana skin, right? And he walks over the banana skin and he doesn't see it and he slips on it and he falls back on his tuchus. And now he's on the floor, right? He's in the dirt, right? His hat's over his ears now. The cigar is like squished up into his face and like exploded a little bit, you know what I'm saying? And what do? We laugh. Now, it's not funny. You shouldn't be laughing. Someone just fell down on a banana skin and hurt themselves. But we can't help but laugh. And even the guy who runs over to help pick him up is like, right? Why are you laughing? It's not funny. I'll tell you why we all laugh at that scene. We laugh because there's a beginning and a middle and an end. What's the beginning? Big fancy guy went down the street. What's the middle? Whoop, banana skin. What's the end? On the tuchus. The punchline happens at the end. Had it happened at the beginning, it would have been funny. Had the scene opened with him on the floor, standing up, brushing himself off and walking down the street, it wouldn't have been funny. I need the punchline at the end. Not only that, the last thing you expect to see of a big guy walking down with a big cigar and a big hat, all the rest of it, is to see him on the floor, covered in dirt, with a cigar in his ear. Okay? That's what makes it funny. So even though it's not funny, I can't help but laughing. Every single joke you're ever going to hear always is going to follow that passage. Are we good on this? Good. Next. I want to bring in the Jewish angle. If I were to say to you, what is the laughter holiday, which is really an event in Jewish history, that exists for us, the Jewish people? What's like the funny holiday? Purim. That's right. Purim, right? On Purim, we all get dressed up. We're laughing. We're joking. Does anyone know the Purim story? It is the unfunniest story in the entire Bible. Right? It's just not funny at all. Like what happens? I'll give you a quick synopsis. There's this guy called Ahasuerus. He's a really, really bad king. And he really was. Like, don't think of him as something like big king with a crown on the side of his head. Oh, ho, ho. Like some kind of like Ahasuerus Santa Claus character, you know. He was a complete madman. Okay? And he has a henchman who is the wealthiest man in the land, if not the world, called Haman. Right? He's causing a lot of trouble. And Ahasuerus kills his wife Vashti. Not very funny. Right, has it like King Henry VIII, right? He chops her head off, whatever he does to her. And then he finds another woman who we don't know her name, right? So we call her Esther. Not really, her name was Hadassah. And we know she's Jewish. And then Haman says, let's kill all the Jews. All the Jews in the entire world. He ruled over 127 provinces. Is it funny? And then what happens? And then this woman, Esther, happens to be Jewish. She says, oh, I'm Jewish, by the way. Haman's a bad guy. Don't kill them. So they're not killed. The end. Thank you and good night. It's like, oh, that's a that's hysterical. Why is that funny? But it is funny. Because it follows our formula exactly. It's actually the archetypal version of a joke, which is, there's a beginning. We have a guy kills his wife. He's looking for a wife now. There's a middle. He finds this wife called Esther. He wants to kill all the Jews. And at the end, what happens? She turns around and says, by the way, I'm Jewish. And it turns around very quickly. And Esther, being Jewish, was the last thing anybody expected. The perfect punchline. No one saw it coming. No one had any clue. And not only that, check this out. The redemption for the Jewish people at that time came from where? From Ahasuerus' wife. Now, that's the last place you would think the redemption would come from. Who would have thought? Okay, fine, a Jewish group comes in and fights their way and defeats them, I hear. But that the source of the problem has within the answer, now that I didn't see coming. I never saw that coming. And maybe the Jews in the day were like, oh yeah, we knew she was Jewish, look at that nose. No, absolutely not. Don't buy it. They had no idea. It all turned around. And actually, the word used in the Megillah, which we actually sing on Purim, is v'nehapachu. V'nehapachu means it turned around very quickly. It was going one way, and bam, it turned around the other way. And that, by the way, is something which only God can do. According to Jewish thought, when big problems happen for the Jewish people, it takes time when we get involved to turn it around. Right? When big tragedies, it takes time to work things out. But this turned around. One moment it's this way, we're all going to absolute, complete destruction, Holocaust in Persia and around, and then bam, it turns around. What's the first thing you do? Unbelievable. That's unbelievable. Give me another example. Here's a good trivia question. Who in Jewish history has the name, obviously in Hebrew, Laughter? Who in history, think about it for a second, has the name Laughter? Very, very important person. It's a male. Anybody know?
Yitzchak.
Yitzchak, right. Now, has anyone seen Yitzchak's life? Right? It's really not funny. Now, I never met him, obviously, but I've read a lot about him. And to be honest with you, not much of a kibitzer. Right? Now, Avraham Avinu, his father, Abraham, he would welcome guests into his house. I'm sure along the way, he would say something humorous. There'd be some conversation. But Yitzchak, there's not really much written on him. Now, Yitzchak's son, Jacob, Yaakov, there's a lot written about him. But Yitzchak, what's the main story we get in the Torah of Isaac, of Yitzchak's life? Anybody know? It's the Akedah, right? The binding of Isaac. Isaac in Hebrew is Yitzchak, which means laughter. Why is that funny? He's got the most difficult life. Well, where did he get the name from? So the name was given to him by God, via his mother and father, which is usually the way, by the way. And his mother's name was Sarah, right? Sarah Imenu. And she couldn't have kids for many, 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 many years. Do you know how old she was when she had her first child? 90. Right, now it's getting interesting, okay? Now, that's not something you expect, right? Even in today's day and age, right, with all the different treatments, you have women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, having kids, but 90? No, I didn't see that coming. So much so that when God told her that she was going to have a child, what did she do? She burst out laughing. V'titzchak Sarah. She laughed. It says the word laughter over there. Why is she laughing? What should she have been? If God tells you you're going to have a child and you've wanted one your entire life and now you're 90 years old, what should your reaction be? Thank you, I'm happy. But she... Now, by the way, make no mistake. Sarah was a very, very holy woman. Rashi, over there, the great commentator of Shlomi Yitzhaki, a Jew, French Jew that lived in Provence, he wrote one of those famous commentaries. He says at this point, around here, that Sarah's level of prophecy, that means her spiritual ability, was greater than that of her husband Abraham. She was a spiritual giant. But she laughed. And straight after she laughed, what does God do? It's a very unusual interaction. He actually tells her off. He says, "What did you laugh for?" She goes, "Oh, I didn't laugh." Well, you're lying to God. What's going on over there? Let me open this up and it'll fit into what we're saying quite nicely. It goes like this. When she laughed, she was saying something. I've just heard something that is funny. What is that? That you're going to have a child at 90. The fact she laughed means there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. The end is, the beginning was, I want a child. Middle is, angels, and now I'm being told I'm going to have a child. Punchline, having a child. What does she do? I don't believe it. That's when you laugh, right? Oh my God, I never saw that coming. You, Sarah, who had that level of prophetic ability, you should not have laughed. And the proof is that Abraham laughed beforehand, and he wasn't told off. And later on, she, when she finally has her son Isaac, a year later to the day, she laughs again, and then she's praised. That laughter was one of complete disbelief because it followed the 1-2-3 formula. Shouldn't have laughed. Now, the word Yitzhak doesn't actually mean laughter. You don't know what it really means? It's a grammar question. It means, and this is important, will laugh. There will be laughter. It's a future tense. That's interesting. Now, let's look for that. There's this idea of laughter that occurs many, many times in Jewish thought that is about the future. I'll give you another clue. We spoke about Purim a moment ago. There is an idea that in the future, all the fast days will disappear. God willing. By the way, how many fast days do we have in the Jewish calendar, by the way? Six. Six fast days. How many feasting days? 80. 80 opposed to 6. So just so we put our emphasis in Jewish life, okay? 80 versus 6. We're more feasters than fasters. I know I am for sure. Okay. So the Rambam Maimonides says that all the fast days at one point, when we're going to speak about in a moment, are going to disappear. Except the fast of Esther, which is a fast we do the day before Purim in the remembrance of Esther, who fasted right before she spoke to Ahasuerus to tell him to save the Jews. So she fasted, so we fast as well. He says, that fast, that's going to remain. Now trust me when I say, that's a very strange thing to say. And he doesn't give a reason. And the Rambam wasn't into weird, spooky stuff. He says it pretty plainly. That's the halacha, that's the law. Tanit Esther is always going to be there. Right into the future. Okay. So he says that about Purim. And then we have this whole Sarah thing, and she calls her son, there will be laughter. Anyone know before we bench, say the grace after meal, the Birchat HaMazon, the blessings at the end of a bread meal, we sing a song. Right? It's a song from the Book of Psalms, which was written, actually it was edited by King David. He wrote some of them. Now, some were written by Abraham, some say actually that even Adam, the first person, wrote some of them down, and he edited them and added a bunch in there himself. So one of the famous ones in Shir HaMalach B'Shuv Adonai Et Shivat Zion Yikachomim Az Yimal Eschol Pin Ol Shenarina. Let me translate. There will be a time in the future, Az Yimal Eschol Pin, when the Jewish people will return to Israel. He's speaking prophetically over here, King David, because the Jewish people were in Israel when he was alive, but they were going about to be kicked out, right? And then, after 2,000 years, about 60 years ago, they're going to go back in. That's what he was talking about. He says, Az Yimal Eschol Pin. The word Az in Hebrew means in the future. It's future tense. And what does he say is going to happen? When all the Jews from all around the world start to gather in Israel, which for 2,000 years did not exist, but now is happening in our day and age, there's going to be laughter. Schok. That same word. Doesn't say happy. Could have said happy. How to say happy in Hebrew? Simcha, happiness. Now we all know that a person can laugh and not be happy. And a person can be happy and not laugh. I know some of the happiest people I know actually never laugh, right? It's all inside. They're very happy with themselves. They're not laughing. I know people who laugh all the time, right? And inside, you know, they're actually broken, crushed individuals. Okay? There's nothing there. I have some people sit down for sessions with me as the rabbi, and they're like, yeah, so my boyfriend left me, and I'm like, was that funny? I mean, I was missing, did I miss the joke, you know? But that's a natural, as we say, defense mechanism. Now, they're not happy. So laughter is its own thing, yeah? Says King David, when all the Jews start to gather from around the world to Israel, which I said is happening now, there's going to be laughter. It didn't say we're going to be happy, so we're going to laugh. Interesting. Now, there's another Talmud, I'm just building this up, so don't leave yet. We're going to close the circle in a moment, that tells the following famous, very famous story. It's from the tractate of Makot. Okay? And that tractate, one of the famous tractates which everyone learns in yeshiva. Some tractates, you know, but this one's a famous one, so I learned this one in great depth. At the end of that tractate, it tells the following story. It tells a story of a great rabbi you may have heard of, Rabbi Akiva. Okay, Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva was standing with a bunch of rabbis who were Rabbi Gamliel, Elazar ben Azariah, and Yoshua. And he was standing outside the temple. Now, the temple had just been destroyed. Okay, and they were watching this terrible scene by the holy Jewish temple that had stood for 400 years, had just been destroyed, and all the Jews were about to be exiled. So they all start to cry. And Rabbi Akiva bursts out laughing. And they say to him, what are you laughing about? And he says in very good Jewish fashion, what are you crying about? And they say, Akiva, you're crazy? The temple, which stood for all these years, the high point of Jewish life, has just been destroyed. And the Romans are down there and they're rejoicing because they've destroyed our holy temple. And he says, that's exactly why I'm laughing. Because right now, they're happy they destroyed our temple. But there's going to be a time when that temple is going to be rebuilt. And all the Jews are going to return to Israel. And then we're going to laugh. I'm tapping into that energy. Strange. There's another Talmudic piece. The plot thickens. About a family called the Avtinas family. This family were the experts in making the incense, the ketoret, they used to burn in the temple. The temple had many services that they honored over there. One of the services were this beautiful smelling spices, right? They would make it, they would crush, and they would burn. And not like the incense you see on the streets, which stink terribly. It was actually a beautiful smell. And people, when they went to Jerusalem, they'd see the sights, and obviously the smell would hit them, right? And that's a very powerful scent. And the olfactory system would kick in, and they'd be like, oh, wow, we're in Jerusalem. One family, the Avtinas family, used to make and had this secret recipe how to make this spices. So one of the rabbis was walking out and he saw the head of this family on the floor laughing and crying, laughing and crying. And he went to him and said, that's a little strange, why are you laughing and crying? He says, I'm crying because the temple's just destroyed and my family, who've had this secret, right, is now we're going to be lost over the centuries, we're going to lose us now because there's no temple, we can't practice anymore. He says, then why are you laughing? I'll tell you why. Because I got a feeling that I know in the future, temple's going to be rebuilt, and everything's going to be fine, and we're all going to laugh. And once again, it doesn't say happy, it says laughter. And laughter does not appear many times in Jewish writings. If it appears in all these times, it must be that there's some connection, and actually there is. We're going to connect all the Talmuds I told you, and that verse, and go back to that first laugh the Jewish people made, and tie it all together. It goes like this. All of Jewish history, no, strike that. All of world history is one big joke. What do I mean by that? That means all of history has a beginning, it has a middle, and it's going to have an end. There's a definite time span to how God created the world, according to Judaism, and how we view history. It started in a certain way, it operates in a certain way, and it's going to finish in a certain way. And just like a Shakespeare play, if you leave halfway, you're left frustrated. Why is he killing him? And he didn't do that. Why is he being punished and hung for that? You've got to wait for the final scene. In the final scene, it all comes together. The whole thing makes sense. If you don't see the final scene, you're just not going to get it. You've got to be there to the end. If you don't read the last page of the novel, it's going to be completely ridiculous. The wrong people are being punished, okay? And the wrong people are getting rewarded. It doesn't make sense. That's because you're halfway through. So the question of why bad things happen to good people is a very big question, not for now. But one thing is, we're not at the end of history. You see, at some point, it's going to happen. And that's the hint that was laid down by our ancestors, right? From Abraham and Sarah, Yitzchak, in the future there'll be laughter. They were sending us a coded message. And Rabbi Akiva was saying the same thing. And King David as well. Azimeli Smokpin, in the future, you're going to see laughter. What were they telling us? What is this secret they were trying to plead and put onto us, future generations? They were saying, don't think that history doesn't have an end. Don't think it ends this way. There is going to be a definite end. All the Jewish people are going to end up in the land of Israel. And there will be no more war. And there will be real peace that's going to happen at the end of days. And at that point, what's everyone going to do? We're going to burst out laughing. Because that twist is going to happen in one big go. What I'm saying is that the world and Jewish history is one big stage and we are the actors. And you can't figure it out until you get to the final scene. It's like leaving the Shakespeare play halfway. Let me read you the words. We'll finish with this. Of a very great rabbi, his son was head of my yeshiva, he actually gave me my rabbinical degree. His name is Rabbi Gedalia Shaw, and he wrote an essay on Purim, because that's when you speak about this stuff. He says the world's like a play, and we are its characters. The ending is a punchline. Only at the end of days will we have absolute clarity as to why so many things happened to the Jewish people over history. It's all going to become clear. and then the entire play is going to make sense. Real laughter comes at the end of days when God's plan is finally revealed, when that final scene is shown. That reversal will lead to true laughter. That's what Sarah was telling us. This son, this first child in the Jewish people, right? He's the first real child among the Jewish people. Abraham and Sarah, first Jews, but this is the first child. They're like, this child brings joy, but there's going to be laughter in the future. Purim is the prime example of that. That's where the Rambam says, all the other fasts is going to go, but this holiday Purim, that's always going to be there. Because this Purim is a microcosm, not just a cute story, it's a microcosm of all of Jewish history. Just like at the end, there was a woman who came and saved the day, and everything made sense, and it all came together, so too, and by the way, I've spoken to various people about this, there's a certain feminine aspect as well to the redemption. And not only that, the redemption for the Jewish people is going to come from the last place you expect it. It has to be. If it wasn't, it wouldn't be funny. And that's why we don't know the date that Messiah is going to come and when that temple is going to be rebuilt. Because if we did, you've ruined the joke. And you're not going to laugh at the punchline. You're only going to get a real enjoyment, a geschmack as they say in Yiddish, out of that final scene when you don't know the date. And that's why no one can know where the end is. If you know the end and how it's going to finish, it's like, okay, next. Like, listen to a joke the second time. It's not as enjoyable. Purim, he says, which is why it's such a very holy holiday, probably the holiest, actually, is that that's why Yom Kippur, says the Arizal, the great Kabbalist, is second to Purim. What does Yom Kippur mean? Yom, day, ker, means like as a prefix, pur, Purim. It's like Purim, it's not as good. Purim is much holier. Purim is only a taste of the future. The laughter we experience on Purim is only a fraction of the laughter we will feel when the true redemption happens. When we see the man, you can't help it. When you see the amazing miracles that happen in Israel all the time, from the founding of the state, right to the wars, it's like, come on. Like, these like 15 Jews came out of the Holocaust, they beat entire armies off. The first thing he says, I don't believe it. You can't help but laugh. It is funny. This is the secret of life, which is the real laugh we, the Jewish people, will have at the end of days. He or she who laughs last, I believe, laughs longest. Okay, thank you very much. We'll finish over there. Any questions on anything I said? That's fantastic. Okay.